Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop, and I am pleased tonight to serve up crime writer Eric Pruitt on the Blue Plate Special. Eric is a writer, filmmaker, and he's been involved in an incredible podcast that we're going to talk about a little bit. He lives in Durham, North Carolina with his wife and his cat, Bussy, and he has short films. He's won several film awards, been a finalist for all sorts of different kind of writing awards. And his third novel, What We Reckon, has been nominated for an Anthony Award at BoucherCon. So instead of finishing up with the introduction, I'm just going to go ahead and get started. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Man, I'm doing great, Terry. Thank you very much for having me on here.
I've really been looking forward to this. I wanted to wait until you got the podcast project, The Long Dance, really, really underway to have you on the show. Why don't you tell folks about what this project is? It's incredible.
Well, it is an 8-part true crime podcast done kind of in the style of Serial and S-Town, where we went deep investigation into the North Carolina Valentine's Day murders. And that's where in 1971, Patricia Mann, a 20-year-old nursing student, and her boyfriend, 19-year-old Jesse McBain, left Valentine's Dance at Watts Hospital School for Nursing, and they were never seen alive again. For 2 weeks, everybody freaked out wondering what happened to them because they found their car the next day at their favorite little makeout spot down at Lover's Lane. And for 2 weeks, the entire town looked for them until finally a land surveyor found their bodies in the woods. They had been tortured, strangled, tied to a tree, and then covered with leaves. And to this day, until our podcast, no one had ever been publicly identified. And you basically had an entire town with rumors and guesses, but there'd never been anything talked about in this crime. Well, with our podcast, we worked closely with the Orange County Sheriff's Office, and we did publicly name the prime suspects.
Oh, really? So how's this podcast been received?
Pretty humbled by how it's been received. We've gotten a lot of downloads. I think as of today, we're at 65,000 downloads. I got stopped on the street yesterday, which was a big hoot. That's never happened to me before. And the best part about all, besides everybody saying that they've enjoyed it or the positive feedback we've gotten, the best part of all is that we have actually gotten tips and additional information emailed or phoned in, not just to me, but also to the authorities. And so this has led to new developments in the case. So where at once we were able to get a DNA analysis done and it didn't lead us anywhere, now we have additional information which could further the investigation and quite possibly lead to hopefully an arrest.
All the way from 1971, you're getting
yep.
Leads and tips.
Yep, a lot of people was brushed under the rug back then. I don't want to give away anything from the story, but it's been long understood for a while that the lead suspect was a doctor, and it was a very prominent person in this town in Durham. And so no one had ever either known that this person had done it, or they had more information about this person, or in the case, in what we're dealing with now, there was a second similar style attempted abduction that no one really talked about that happened a year later. Well, now
really?
All of this information is coming in on the doctor and on that second attempted abduction. And since it was an attempt, we have something we don't have in the first case, and that is survivors, eyewitnesses. And we have been talking to them, and we have a composite sketch. And, if I was a prime suspect in this case, I'd be looking over your shoulder right about now.
So did the murder occurred in Durham?
It did. That's kind of the tricky part, is it happened in Durham, but he took the bodies and put them 400 yards over the Orange County line, which is it shares a border here with Durham. So that ended up involving a total of 6 different law enforcement agencies. And back in 1971, they weren't technically able to communicate with each other. And not
mm-hmm.
only that, a lot of them didn't want to. So that created a big problem that allowed this murder to go unsolved for 47 years.
As a criminal defense attorney, I can totally understand the jurisdictional thing. And that
oh,
was probably that was probably done as a forensic countermeasure.
It happened also in the second attempted abduction, taken from Durham, brought over to Orange County. So obviously this dude knew what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Now, where can people find this this podcast?
You can find it anywhere. We're at thelongdancepodcast.com, and you can find everything there. But we're also on iTunes, Apple, Stitcher, iHeart, you name it. We should be on every platform. If we're not on a platform, holler at me and I'll get it on there, but it should be on it.
Okay. So if people go in and Google The Long Dance, and that's Dance, D-A-N-C-E, podcast,
absolutely,
they're going to be able to find it and download the episodes?
Should be the first thing that comes up. You can download it from any of those places I've named or go straight to the website, Google it. You have any problem whatsoever getting it, you just holler at me and I'll make sure you get it.
Okay. So who are you working with on this?
I had been working with an investigative reporter named Drew Adamek and our sound engineer, Piper Kessler, who has also worked with me on just about all of our films that we do. She is an extremely talented sound engineer out here in Durham. And when we first started talking, I was like, I'm only into this if Piper's in with me. And it's been great. I have my old college roommate, Mike Rollin. He scores all our music for the podcast and for the films. My wife did the web design. So it's a very small team, but it's a dedicated one. And then also I cannot leave out Major Tim Horn of the Orange County Sheriff's Office. He helps guide the listener through the entire investigation, and he is never sleeps, still trying to work on this murder that happened when he was 2 years old. So
that's amazing. How'd it come to be? How'd this team come together and decide to do this? Because this is quite the undertaking. Because this isn't a podcast. I mean, this is an episode ID discovery here.
That's a pretty good analogy there. Yes, I would agree. It's been a lot of fun. Drew looked me up after I had an article written in our local paper, and he's an investigative reporter, and he said he liked to do research. But wanted to find somebody that enjoyed writing. And so he just reached out to me after reading an article and asked if I wanted to look into something we could deep dive into, do some kind of investigative study on. And originally we were thinking print, and we had given ourselves an assignment. We were like, let's take a week, each look up five cases that are just humdingers, and then come back, have coffee, and we'll go over each of our five and discuss which one we should go with. Well, I uncovered this man McBain thing, and it was a hard thing to come across. And once I got it, I didn't even look for the other four. I was like, this is the one, and brought it in. And, of course, he agreed, and we realized this isn't something you can do with print. This is a pretty detailed story. It's like an onion. You peel it, and there's more layers. But, however, with this story, the onion gets bigger with every layer you peel away.
That's amazing. And let me ask you a question, because I've been to North Carolina, I've been to Raleigh-Durham, but I'm not super-duper familiar with it. We're talking 50 years ago. What was Durham like then? Was it more like a small town, or was it still a big city, or what?
Well, for one thing, out here in Durham, we do call it Durham-Raleigh. By the way. No. No, back then, you have to remember, like, basically the cigarette was invented here. From about, mid-1880s to about 1960, there was like Carnegie money running through here. So this small kind of country town that didn't even exist before 1860s, all of a sudden had 95% of the world's tobacco was coming through Durham. So it turned it into like this boom town out of nowhere. Well, by about the time the 70s hit, there were a series of, civil disasters, et cetera, that just, the tobacco business started drying up after the Surgeon General's warning. Just a series of things happened that put Durham on a steady decline. So by the time 1971 rolls around, you're starting to see, the effects of that, which are crime. Lots of crime. Everybody's suddenly out of a job. A lot of people that were doing really, really well weren't anymore. Add to all of that the conflict that the rest of the world is going through at the time between Vietnam and, Manson was happening. The Speck murders were just a couple months old, the change that the entire world is going through was going through here. But as well, when you watch the decline of the tobacco empires, You know, it was an odd town for North, even by North Carolina standards at that time.
Because it's interesting, because one thing, this thread goes through some of my own writing as well, is that towns, and even within bigger places, there are still towns, you know, because there are different neighborhoods and enclaves, is that the gross domestic product is secrets.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh,
what.
Yeah.
That's,
especially when you have rich folk around.
That's
Durham back then was also known as the city of medicine. We had a lot, you know, between Duke and all the different hospitals. So you had doctors running around. And everybody said doctors were one rung below God. And so a lot of times doctors just had their way. We were talking to a nurse today that said back then, if a doctor walked into the room, the nurse had to get up, stand up, and offer the doctor the seat. You know, what the hell? But that was kind of how things go. So like I said, it was no secret. One of our prime suspects was a doctor. And this was kind of the prevailing attitude back then that would allow something like that.
That is fascinating. And I can't wait. I've started the series, but I haven't been able to work my way through it yet. So everybody, check out The Long Dance. You will not be disappointed. The podcast is fantastic. But now, this dude, Eric Pruitt, he's been writing these books. Have you heard anything about them?
Me? I may have heard a thing or two. I heard a thing or two. Yes, ma'am.
Why don't you tell me about your newest book, the Anthony-nominated What We Reckon. Just give me the two-minute summary of what it's about.
Oh, you got it. What We Reckon is about two people. They're a career con artist, a man and a woman, platonic. And they have arrived on the next town on their little reign of terror across the South. They've arrived into Lufkin, Texas, in East Texas, with a hollowed out King James Bible with a kilo of cocaine inside, and they need to move that cocaine. But unfortunately for the both of them, they're both starting to lose their minds and get a little tired of each other. So hilarity ensues.
Mayhem ensues.
Yes, it's a family picture.
Rumor has it that you have a reading from this book.
I love to read, so chances are always high that I've got something to read.
And I love to let you read. So why don't you give us a sample from What We Reckon? Do you need to set it up at all?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I think that it's one of those that kind of lets you know what's going on. The only thing I'd set up is that Jack Jordan is the man. Summer Ashton is the woman. They are friends and con artists and partners in crime. And they have just arrived into Lufkin, East Texas with this kilo of cocaine. And I think that's it.
Get it on.
All right, this is actually chapter 3, so we'll just get right into it. Summer didn't believe him, but Jack stood convinced there was a science to laying low. Never contact anyone from the past. Let sleeping dogs lie. And once you cross a state line, you stay across it. Don't give anybody reason to question your story. This means keeping wild tales of hoorah to a minimum. Get into details and leave little worth research. And pay cash as often as possible. The current political climate did not fare well for folks caught acting shady with credit cards and identities, so it was best to keep to the back roads. No point filling out an application to some fancy apartment complex in town, then subject oneself to the background checks, credit reports, and the scrupulous eye of a moneylender. No, much better to find some hillbilly renting a lighthouse trailer on Craigslist. They met at the foot of a dead end road awash with overgrowth and covered by pine. The woman's name was Debbie Delco, and she loved Jesus, or so she said. She cast a wary eye over both him and Summer, then pursed her lips like maybe she'd just eaten a lemon. She crinkled her nose and said to Jack, "I'll have you know, we don't much care for the cohabitation of the sexes. I'm afraid that simply won't do. While folks from Dallas and the rest of the country may have adopted liberal values, I assure you we here in Lufkin still lay our claim to what is good and right and dictated in print among the pages of the King James." "As do we," said Jack in an even tone. "Presbyterian ourselves have been for 6 generations. This here is my sister Summer, and Mom reckoned it best for the two of us to share a place so we can save what money we can, as well as keep an eye on each other." Jack winked, then hitched a thumb over his shoulder at Summer. She hopped up and down and spread her arms, then raced across the switchback like she was in a raisin commercial. She shuffled to the trailer, then fell to her knees at the wooden pallet, which had been propped up to make a patio. She hugged the very ground she knelt upon and made happy little noises. Squee, squee, squee. Said Jack, she needs special attention, if you get my meaning. Summer collapsed at the base of a dandelion. She shaded it with her hands from the afternoon sun. Bless her little heart, said Debbie Delco. My name is Jack Jordan. Debbie Delco accepted his hand and wiped it on the leg of her slacks as she slapped on her best Sunday smile. And bless yours for taking good care of your family. Well, was all he said. He ducked his head as if he might be allergic to a kind word. What do you say we see about that trailer? It's a lighthouse, she said as she waved her arm across its facade. My daddy bought it new in 54 and kept it up until he died 42 years later. Since then, my mama and I have rented it out to whoever could pay on time, just so long as they ain't Mexican. It ain't moved from that very spot since sometime in the 80s, and I have to tell you, because of the location, I've grown accustomed to meeting folks at challenging points in their lives. She leaned in close to whisper. They usually go one or two ways from this here lighthouse. They either join the church of their choice, or one day end up clearing out. Jack nodded his head. He made to say something, but was drowned out by a passing train, the railroad so close that the windows shook. This ain't exactly how it looked on the internet, said Jack. Nothing looks like it does on the internet, she replied. You don't expect me to be the one to make sense of that, do you? I'm just saying, said Jack. If he had more to add to that thought, he kept it to himself. I want first and last month's rent up front, she said, and the security deposit, in cash. Not a problem, he said, but he set it to the 5-foot pokeweed scratching across the back half of the trailer, the half which had rusted to a shit brown. And you'll be responsible for the upkeep, she said. It said so on the advertisement, and I'm certain you saw it. He nodded and swallowed tight, his wheels spinning. It's fine, he said, so long as your AC works. It works, she stood still as a statue. You a handy guy around the house? Not in the slightest. In that case, it might not work all the time, she said. Is that going to be an issue? It ain't, if you agree to knock $100 off the place. I will do no such thing, Jack sighed. Then I reckon it won't be a problem. Shall we take a look inside? She asked, leading the way. There you have it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I would say that you were nominated for that, Anthony, for a reason.
Thank you very much, Terry. Thank you.
I can't wait. I really look forward to seeing you. You're going to be at BoucherCon, correct?
Yes. Yes, I am. I think if they nominate you for an award, I think you're required to show up.
Well, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see you there in person. And you have got this. What we reckon is available. Correct. So fine, folks can go to their bookseller of their choice and get a copy of it.
Absolutely. What we reckon, Dirtbags, and Hashtag are all three under the Polis banner. So you can go to the Polis website, Amazon, your local bookstore, anywhere you want, and those three books are ready for you right now.
And you have one that's on pre-order right now called Townies and Other Stories of Southern Mischief. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, I can't wait for that. That's one of the things that, like, you know, as a fan of Flannery O'Connor and et cetera, I was like, you haven't made it in this world until you've had two novels and a short story collection. Well, I got three novels, and I'm about to check off the short story collection, so I'm feeling pretty good. Townies and Other Stories of Southern Mischief is also coming out from Polis. And it's got, I believe, 20 stories.
Wow.
Some published, some not. I did a couple stories on Joe Clifford's and Tom Pitt's Out of the Gutter, which, you know, those have to be about 1,000 words. So there's a couple in there that are shorties. but yeah, there's some that are published, some that aren't. The main story itself, Townies, is a brand new thing that I put out just for this collection. And I can't wait for it to come out. Cover photo by Brian Phelps, a good old boy from Lufkin.
Oh, it's the book is beautiful looking, just beautiful. And it is currently available for pre-order through Amazon and I'm sure other places. And it's coming out in October?
It is October the 16th, I believe.
Yes.
October 16th.
October the 16th. And so you're reprinting a couple. I can say too that I too have been published in Out of the Gutter, and there's so I know your story from there is going to be amazing, and it's going to have sharp, jagged edges.
It was a finalist for the Derringer, so
sweet.
If that means something, woohoo!
Yes, it does. So, and then what else are you doing? Because I know you run the Noir in the Bar series in and around Durham. So do you have anything interesting coming up?
We don't have anything on the books yet. Last year we did a really, really fun one for Christmas, where it was Christmas themed noir. And I think everybody showed up with a brand new story they wrote just for the event. It was holiday themed. I don't have anything planned, but I mean, everybody's been asking me if we're going to do another one of those. So let's see. But mm-hmm. I do have a biggie coming. I don't have a date yet, but it is fall. It will be out in the fall. We have been working for a while on a short film called Going Down Slow, which mm-hmm. Stars Michael Howard and Edith Snow. And this is my bad boy right here. It's a dark slice of Southern noir. It's about a married couple who find themselves at a crossroads in their relationship that must put aside their differences in order to bury a hobo. So it's a romantic comedy.
The family that slays together.
Yeah. See, you know what I'm talking about. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is fantastic. And as I was saying when we were chatting in the green room, one of my bucket list items is to go on a wild drive with Eric Pruitt hunting for barbecue. So is that a date?
Yeah, Florida. I mean, I'm
we're
sure
there.
Florida's got something funny that passes for barbecue, and we'll eat it.
We'll find it.
Yeah,
well, I look
absolutely.
I look forward to seeing you there, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Pretty much, it's ericpruitt.com, which is ericpruitt.com. That's where people can stalk. I mean, that's where people can keep up with you.
Absolutely, I got the Instagram, the Twitter, Facebook, etc. I'm on all those things. So Snapchat, if you're up late and want, you know, I'm kidding. I'm there. I'm not hard to find.
You know, your probation officer said the last time was the last time, bro.
Statute of limitations, man. It is run out. We're good to party. In Florida, everything's legal, as we will find out at the BoucherCon.
Now, I am not admitted to practice in Florida, so don't be thinking that you're going to be able to use that as an excuse.
Well, I bet you could probably talk us out of lots of hairy situations still, whether you're admitted to practice or not.
All right, you can keep
us out of the who's gal.
All right, my friend, it was great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you in Florida. And I'm going to want to have you back on the podcast when your next project comes around.
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
All right. With that, I will say thank you and good night.
Thank you. And remember, Florida, bring bail money.
Absolutely. And everyone, this bit of wackiness is totally owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And with that, I will say good night and thank you to everyone. Take care now.